and let us know that you're here. That was wonderful. And Katie's going to lead our children's chat this morning, so all of the kids are welcome to come up for their special time with Katie. Come on, guys. Here they come. You're all welcome. Hey guys, how's it going? Today we're going to be talking about what. We're going to start with a question. I'm wondering if you guys can tell me what you think God looks like. So, Leslie, we'll start with you. What do you think God looks like? Like hair? Okay. Yeah. You very good hair. That's a really interesting idea. What about you, Xander? Do you have like an imagine like a thing you think of? How about you, Kai?
All of us.
All of us. That's really cool.
Right over here, just to make sure that you get a clipboard so that you can do the crafts and programs
seats today. So thank you so much, Katie. So this morning, we're going to continue our series that we're calling Essentials. And it's based on the book, Nine Essential Things I've Learned About Life by Rabbi Harold Kushner. And this series is really an invitation to ask questions, questions that you may not have been able to ask before, questions that maybe it was easier for you to keep them silent or hold them to yourself, or questions that you may not have necessarily felt welcome to ask at a church, or questions that you've been wrestling with your whole life, and somehow you may have had a canned answer or a defensive answer to that question, but like sometimes it's just about sitting with that question. So we're going to live through this series asking those tough questions, not necessarily always finding the answers, but that we're in it together on the search. One of the things that I have experienced in the institutional church, in some churches, is that sometimes by focusing more on the answer, and when there are differences of opinion on the answer, and then a church can say, this is the right way to believe, or the right way to answer this question, or the focus on having that right answer, what it does is it divides people into tribes. Insiders and outsiders, right and wrong. What I think questions do is questions can hold us together, hold us in relationship when we think differently, when we have a diversity of beliefs and opinions, and questions can help us to value those differences and to recognize that within those differences, we can catch a different glimpse of who God is and who God's people are. So if the answers didn't fit, if you've left a community here, we're going to have a safe place to ask all of those questions. So through this series, we have asked questions about faith, about God, about forgiveness, about sin, about religion. And this week, we are going to wrestle with questions around doubt and anger. So just a reminder, because I know with some of these topics that we've been talking about through the message series, and it might take you a little bit longer, if you have a question that you may not have been able to ask before, I want you to feel safe to be able to ask that question. So on the clipboards, we usually do this in the offering time, but I'm going to do this now, to pass the clipboards and take one of the golden sheets of paper, so that if you do have a question, you have more time to formulate that question. Then during the offering time, we're going to put them in the offering basket. If you would like to share your question in the gathering, we will share it. Or there's a little box on that piece of paper. If you would like to share that question with me privately, you can check that box and I will hold on to that for you. So this morning, we're going to start with a quote from Kushner's book. I believe it is not only permissible, but a religious obligation to question the existence of God if you are troubled by some of the things you were taught, to question the divine origins of things that are said in God's name, and then to go on and search for answers to your questions. Rabbi Kushner argues that doubt is not only permissible, but that it is actually a religious obligation. So I'm going to open up some time to just reflect on this for a little bit with a big question. How does doubt shape your faith? How does doubt shape your faith? I think one of the, if you have a, Alyssa's going to come around with the mic. One of the people in my life who I have truly admired as a saint is Mother Teresa, and in her life, doubt played a huge role in shaping her life and faith. So what is it for you if you have ever had doubt? How does that shape your faith? So Kathy and Betsy.
The wonder of doubt and the obligation to search for answers, I would have left all religion a long time ago. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does.
But searching for answers is engaging, and that's what I do.
Thank you, Kathy. Betsy?
high school had a number of them that were very well-educated teachers. And this one particular nun one day, when we were freshmen, came into us and she said, if you don't doubt the existence of God before you graduate from here, we have not done our job.
Wow.
And they really challenged us, okay? And so I got that from somebody else. I also got, in the trials that I went through, deep times of doubt. First of all, of myself, okay? But also of God. And in that, God stripped me. And he took away some of the yuckies that I had just assumed habits of God and stuff. And so I think, you know, it's part of God's way of reaching deep down into our hearts.
And there are many gifts. Oh, Alyssa, you want to say something?
Yeah. I think doubt is something that makes it a journey instead of just a stagnation. It leads you somewhere to kind of grow and continue searching and finding yourself and finding God versus just staying stagnant.
Beautiful.
And Dan?
Well, I think doubt in religion, like doubting anything else, is when you doubt something and then are able to find it, your strength in that is even greater and deeper.
Right. Thank you. I think there are many gifts that come out of doubt. Strength, ingenuity. I still love this story about your nun who said it's our job to hopefully encourage them. I'm going to share a video this morning featuring Rachel Held Evans. And she is a beautiful theologian. This video is also speaking to me deeply because she recently passed away of the flu. It's kind of heartbreaking. But this is this beautiful video about how doubt has played a role in her life. So let's watch this together.
How you cultivate that posture of having it in. Doubt is what tells you that maybe this thing that you think is fundamental is non-negotiable, maybe it is, maybe the essentialism of this is not central to the Christian faith. Maybe a young earth is not central to the Christian faith. So I'm grateful for doubt in my life because it has taught me that I can get this stuff wrong. I can be wrong. Even in matters of faith, it's made me more humble, more dependent on Christ. So I'm grateful for doubt. It keeps faith, it keeps my faith alive and thinking, and where certainty sort of just freezes it, you know. I think doubt plays an important role in faith. I don't think it's the opposite of faith. I think it keeps faith awake, alive. Thinking, movable, changeable. I just want to be yielded. I really do. I want, even as I've changed and I have new convictions, I want to stay open to the fact that I get stuff wrong. The church has gotten stuff wrong in the past. And I want to have a tender, yielded heart that can change when I'm wrong. And I don't see how else to do that unless I have a healthy place for doubt. Second thoughts. Life. It makes the faith a little more challenging. It makes it a little harder sometimes, but I've found that it makes it more real. Well, I'm not willing. I've heard of so many pastors who have told me, if you just take your emotions out of it, if you just take your intellectual struggles out of your faith, then you'll be a better obedient Christian. I'm not willing to do that. I'm not willing to be a robot as I've been on this journey. I want to follow Jesus with my head and my heart fully engaged, alive, awake. That's a bigger risk. It's a bigger risk to stay engaged, but I'm not willing to be a Christian any other way. I don't know how to be a Christian any other way. I don't think Jesus called me to be a Christian. any other way.
I love that she starts with that quote from Frederick Buechner, that doubt is the ants in the pants of faith. Like, I love that image, doubt is the ants in the pants of faith. So doubt plays an important role. It encourages openness, growth, and honesty. I love how she uses the word yields. It frees me to make mistakes. It helps me to yield, to be humble, to know that I have this opportunity to be wrong and to change or to think differently when I might encounter someone else. And doubt is not a lapse in faith, but doubt is born. Doubt is born out of faith. And doubt emerges out of a sense of life's unfairness, out of a concern for what is right and wrong, out of a concern for people, for the environment, for our world. And the Bible is filled with stories of people who doubt over and over again, doubt and wrestle with their faith. Moses is, I think, my favorite figure of someone who doubts, continually doubts. And so just to talk about him and his story for a little bit. In the book of Exodus, in the third chapter, Moses encounters a burning bush. It's God in this bush. And God calls him and gives him this huge task of leadership. And he says, he will be the one to confront Pharaoh. He will be the one to lead his people out of slavery into freedom. This is what God is calling him to do. And Moses responds with doubt. Why me? What makes you think I could ever go to Pharaoh and lead the children of Israel out of Egypt? And then the two of them continue to argue, God and Moses, arguing back and forth. And Moses tries to convince God that anyone else would be able to be doing a better job than him. Anybody else, like, pick anybody else, send someone, find someone. And finally, God finds his brother Aaron. And God says to Aaron, look, Moses is going to do this, and you're going to help him out. And so, with Aaron by his side, Moses finally yields, and they lead the people. They get from Pharaoh, they escape plagues, they flee from Pharaoh's army, they cross the Red Sea, they're in the wilderness, then there's manna from heaven, there's the Ten Commandments, and all this stuff. And through all of it, Moses wrestles with doubt over and over and over again. And he continues to lead the people, and he continues to doubt. Then, at the end of his life, if you turn to the book of Deuteronomy, which is the last book of the Torah, Moses has come to near the end of his life, and now he can see the promised land, which he's been traveling to get to bring his people to for all these years. And he gets angry with God. He's expressing this anger through a sermon to the people, recounting all of the events, remembering, you know, bringing out the collective memory of the people, that he heard their complaints and their anger, and then he heard God's anger at the people because they're being disobedient. And he's remembering all of these complaints from the people and the God, and then he's even more angry, and he says, I have served you faithfully for all these years, sacrificing my relationships with my family, my wife, and my children. And he asks God, what is my reward for all of this faithful service? All of these people have made my life miserable. Well, get into the promised land. This is in Deuteronomy, in the chapters 2 and 3. He says, you know, my life has been miserable serving all of you, and now those people are going to get into that promised land, and I won't. Even their children, who don't know the difference between right and wrong, he says, even they're going to get to go into the promised land, and I won't. Moses is angry. I'd be angry. And he says to God, this is unfair. He begs God at one point in that chapter of Deuteronomy to let him go. Have you ever been in that place? So here's Moses recounting this whole story, expressing his anger. Why does he bear the responsibility of the consequences when they're not his own? The people who rebelled against God and didn't listen, they're the ones who are receiving the promise. Why? Why at this point in his life, after 40 years of leadership and service, why does Moses express his anger in this way? Kushner quotes the work of an Anglo-Israeli scholar who offers a different interpretation of this story. And she says, Moses sends his anger toward God in order to give the Israelites permission by his example to voice their anger. It is by expressing this anger, by expressing the unfairness of it all, the struggle in the relationships, the messiness, the seeming on the outside injustice, by articulating and recounting the relationship and the raw emotions and the honesty, that it makes way for a deeper relationship. By expressing the fullness of their anger, the people could know that through it all, they had a relationship with God. No matter their needs, they would be cared for. No matter their emotions, God was in it. They could trust God, and God would fulfill the promises. The promises would stand no matter what. They could trust God. And then it is with all of this raw honesty that Moses then reminds the people that in all things, God would be with them, that God was their God, and they are God's people, and they are loved. And then we come to the sixth chapter, fifth verse of Deuteronomy, and this is when they all say, Moses said, and I'll invite you to read this with me together. To love God, with your whole heart. Love him with all that's in you. Love him with all you've got. This is the Shema, the basis of their faith, that in order to love and to be loved, first they needed to be free to be honest with their emotions and their most deeply held feelings about the relationship. This is a different way of thinking about anger than the way that most of us are taught on how to handle and manage and work through our anger. So what have you been taught about anger? Have you ever thought of anger in this way? Or have you been taught that anger is bad, that it should be suppressed, that you keep your anger to yourself? What have you been taught about anger?
Pastor once told me that anger is one letter away from danger. So I think about it a lot, and before I get angry and basically get dangerous, I try to rethink what I'm going to say.
Okay, so you rethink,
yeah.
Right, when you feel that anger.
Okay. I've learned that nobody else likes my anger like I like my anger.
In the past, anger was something that wasn't really allowed to be expressed, and yet there's been a reframe, I think from some of the people I feel really blessed to know, and the reframe is anger can be helpful if it's there's discernment within it, and how might I use this to motivate for good rather than letting it consume. So I think it's how we utilize it, not necessarily what it is in itself. Yes. Jan and Dave?
I've been taught
than anger and fear of the same emotion just expressed differently. Hmm.
According to Keith Brown, apparently, the Greek, there's two words that have helped me a lot. One is like volcano, that's destructive. And then I forget the other one, but anger is a gift that's telling you something ain't right and you need to address something. And then the best one was just a Bible quote, don't let the sun go down upon your wrath. Don't let it get angry.
What have you been taught about anger?
Anger is something I study a lot because it's part of the forgiveness cycle, and there's so many levels of anger, but I think the one that is the hardest to deal with is anger at yourself. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people kind of run away from that. But I think that's a real healing of anger.
For me, anger is passion. When you have passion about something, you argue, you question, you engage. It's just like a relationship. I see it. If you don't fight with your spouse and you don't argue about it, maybe perhaps you don't really have a real relationship. So when you're angry and you're passionate and you care, you have discussions that you may not always agree upon, but at least you're talking and communicating and you're passionate about where you're in.
Okay.
And
Marcy.
For me, anger is a very complex emotion. If I could not just like this guy's face, Linda, but I'm feeling sadness or frustration, disappointment, sometimes disappointment with me and somebody else. But it's very, very complex, and it's more than just anger. So I sort of just want to have a list of five other emotions to go with it.
Yes. And Will. Kim's going to turn it on for you. Go ahead.
My troubles, I get to certain places in the cold regions, and I find one particular town, although I can find many more, that the entire town is angry. And what's really neat is that they're perfectly happy to be angry.
This all reminds me that anger is layers, right? There's layers of anger. It's individual relationships or it's whole communities we can feel and express anger. I think Moses is a wonderful example of how we can express our anger. Many studies have been done on expressing anger. I think anger can be a way of growing in honesty in relationships, expressing our needs, and also how to change in relationships. Often anger is a sign of wanting change or things to be different. It's interesting, Will, that you identify that, you know, here they're happy to be angry, but I wonder, would they want to change? That would be sort of, they don't want, they like it just the way they are. But anger can also be healthy in terms of other ways of thinking about relationships. It's healthy to express our anger because when we do, it actually lowers our blood pressure. It can actually decrease heart attacks and stroke when we can express our anger. I was fascinated by some of the studies that I was reading. I'm not in the medical field, but I was seeing all of these studies which showed that anger, there's a direct correlation between expressing it in a healthy way and a healthy physiological response. It's also healthy to understand that anger is not, and other emotions are not dualistic. So thinking about what Marcy shared, that it's just often complex and there's a lot going on under the surface. Oftentimes people think that happiness is on one side and anger is on the other, as if it's a dualistic tension, like linearly, thinking linearly, and it's not. Oftentimes, there are other feelings connected with anger. Sometimes there's something called compassion anger. So for whole communities, like what Kristen was talking about, it's a way of making positive change in the world. When we see something as unfair or unjust, it can help move us to seek justice for wholeness, for communities. Like an example that I thought of was when we learned about unclean water sources or contaminated water or lack of water in different places in the world. One of the projects that the Barn had done was supporting clean wells, and Blank Slate has just done this, where they purchased clean wells in places in Africa. So expressing healthy anger can be a cathartic path toward transformation. And anger in itself is a healthy emotion. The challenge is, like Mikey said, it's one step away from danger, because it's not the emotion itself that's dangerous, it's what we do with our anger that can get in the way. So I'd like to lead us in sort of an activity about anger, like a reflection activity on our anger, to help us kind of take control over, reflect on what it is and how we can respond when we're angry, because oftentimes it is complex. So what I'd like to invite you to do is just find a comfortable way to sit in your chair. And to think about, we're going to think about together, how can we embrace anger in a healthy way and express it in healthy ways that can be meaningful in our relationships. So if it helps you to close your eyes or to breathe deeply, I'd like you to take a moment and think of the last week, of a time when you were angry. Think of the last time you felt anger. Maybe it was in a personal relationship or a working relationship. Maybe it was watching the news this week. But think about the last time you felt angry. And what was it in the interaction that started your anger? What was in the moment that you could feel it begin to rise within you? What other emotions were you feeling? Take a moment and reflect. What were you really angry about? What was the problem? And whose problem is it? How can I sort out who is responsible for what? How can I learn to express my anger in a way that will not leave me feeling helpless and powerless? When I'm angry, how can I clearly communicate my position without becoming defensive or attacking? What risks and losses might I face if I become clearer and more assertive? If getting angry is not working for me, what can I do differently?
So I'm going to invite you to take a moment and come back to this space, back to the room. So the seven questions at the end came from an article from Psychology Today called The Seven Most Important Anger Questions to Ask Yourself. And I think when reflecting on our anger and healthy anger, I think these seven questions can really, really help us, because we often fear anger not because of the emotion itself, but we can fear the responses to the anger or the change and loss that can accompany anger, whether that change or loss is good or bad. And we fear change not because change is good or bad, but we fear the loss that accompanies the change. I think these questions can help us in our self-awareness around anger, like how can we live in relationship with others to be able to be free and honest in expressing anger, the complexity of anger, and also helping us to choose what we will be angry about. And accepting anger, ours and that of people close to us, has to be part of any honest relationship. Anger is complicated. It's complicated. And I'm grateful that anger has healthy ways of being expressed, for example, in the Bible. But I do believe that to be truly authentic in any relationship, in our relationship with God, and in our relationships with others, to help build trust and respect, to find healthy ways to express our doubt and anger, can lead us to deeper love and trust and faithfulness in our relationships. So again, I'm going to invite you to, if you have a thought or a reflection on doubt or anger, to write it on those pieces of paper. We can wrestle some more, because I think doubt and anger are topics that often the church is not tackled, even though the Bible tackles it over and over and over again. But more than anything, our hope is that through the questions and through the wrestling and through the struggle, that we can build our relationships in an honest and authentic way. Because love wins in the end. Love wins.
There was only one prayer request out on the board. So I'd like to encourage you, as you sit at your seats, to lift your prayer request as I'm praying. The one from the board, we have someone in the community that is going to court on the 7th. And 7th? No, that's not right. Has this been up there for a while? Okay. Anyway, to help keep this person in prayer as they're dealing with the things that they had to go to court on the 7th with. Okay, so if there's anything else that you want to lift in prayer as I'm praying, just lift that to yourself as a seat. So I encourage you to close your eyes and open your heart. Heavenly Father, we are here together in your community, this community of love, as we wrestle with the big questions, doubt, anger. There's a lot to be angry about right now, Father, in this world. People that are sick and dying, things that are going on politically, addictions, homelessness, trauma. There are so many things that are going on. Financial problems, relationships ending, the anguish of relationships beginning, the loss of a child or a loved one. We ask you to be there with us as we wrestle with this doubt, whether it's self-doubt or doubt in you. We ask you to be there. Let us remember that you love us, that we are wrapped in your arms, and even in the hard times, even in those times where we don't have the answers, and we are so extremely angry that you're right there, and you'll help us to grapple with it and walk through it, and that we can also be the beacon for someone else that is going through these same angers and self-doubt and doubting you, that we may be an example of your love as we reach out to them. And for all of those things that are being lifted in prayer today, I ask you to hear each and every prayer, Father, and walk with them and carry them if need be through each and every one of them. And I thank you for this and all things, and in the name of your sweet Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
The applications now for those who are going to be part of the team that are going to travel to Honduras this summer. And so I've asked Jared Campbell to come and say a few words about his experience on our last trip.
So, that's loud. I was really impressed before I went to Honduras. Sue asked the community to, for the show of hands, who's been to Honduras? It's always such a neat thing to see. So I was curious about Honduras because I'd heard so many wonderful things about the experiences and the trips that we had taken. And at that point, my daughter was 18, and my parents really got me into the missional side of my faith when I was young, and I really wanted Jada to experience that, and said, this is such a fantastic opportunity for us both to be able to have that experience. And you'll see some of the pictures. Is there more than one or just one? Just one group. If you get a chance, talk to people who raise their hand. If you're curious at all about what the experience would be, talk to someone who's been. The last year we went was an immersion trip, similar to this year's trip. This is an immersion trip too. So it was one of those things where you don't go down for the purpose of doing something for someone else. You don't build something for someone else. That can sometimes have misconstrued. The immersion trip, speak freely for Jada too. For Jada and myself, was one where we were able to immerse ourselves in a culture where people really don't live the same way that we do, and how beautiful that can be. And I'll never forget walking up the road the first day we went to the school. Walking up the road, Will's remembering it too, like it was yesterday. You walk up a dirt road and there's like nothing. There's burnt out houses, vacant lots, some nice places, some not so nice places. And you walk up and you're looking up on the hill and there's this big banner that means welcome. And they've got these smoke candles on either side, which would be quite a bit of colorful smoke. And you saw so many smiles. And it was so fun to walk up, and we were within maybe 30 yards, and the kids just started coming. And they started hugging you. And it was groups of 10, I mean, like, not just a kid hugging, like 10 kids, like, hugging your legs, and you bend down, you scoop them up, you give them big hugs, and the way you feel while you're in the presence of the children in that school makes you a better person. It really, truly does. It made me a better person. But I think if I were to glean something about what the trip meant to me in the long run, it's perspective. You really realize, when you go, you really realize it's not a place in the world where you can just pick yourself up by your bootstraps, work harder, and succeed. It just doesn't happen that way. I remember, I won't be too wordy, I'll try not to be too wordy, but I remember one of the days we would immerse ourselves in the vocation or the employment of students' parents. And the mother of one of the boys who was at the school, her job was 6 days a week, mind you, sometimes seven, was to wake up at some ungodly hour in the morning, pack up all the things that she had, go to a push cart on the road, set everything up, and sell things. Every night, take things down, pack it all up, and go home, mind you, walking, because the car wasn't available. Most of them don't have cars, but I think her husband took it if he had to. She would sell hair products, yes, I was jealous, women's undergarments, toothpaste, toothbrushes, things we don't think about. So we did what they did. And I was out on the street, yeah, the white guy on the street selling toothpaste and toothbrushes. He's fun. But you realize how special the interactions with everybody down there are. And I spoke with someone this morning, and I'm not going to divulge his name because I didn't get permission to do so, but that person said to me, you know, I've got to put all my excuses aside. I've just got to do it. Because we can look at our lives and say, well, I really, you know, I got this going on. I only have 2 weeks of vacation. I don't have the money to do it. What do I do? What do I say? It doesn't matter. I would encourage you, if you're curious at all, if you didn't raise your hand, if you haven't been there, or if you haven't, you want to go experience it again, Marty, do it. You know what? You're perfect. Talk tomorrow. It's addictive. I mean, it really is. When you stop and think about it, embrace the curiosity of your situation, of your life. Put the excuses behind you and just figure out how you can do it and how you can make it happen. I would really recommend you turn in an application, and I just thought of it when I said your name with Marty, but talk to Marty. I mean, I know I spoke with Marty before I went, and it's just, it's an experience you'll never forget. It's beautiful. You learn so much about that culture, and you learn so much about yourself and our culture. And I guess my prayer is that if you have any interest in going, that you just do it. And my other prayer is that selfishly I wish that I thought about it more. You know, as time goes on, you forget about things. But this has also given me the opportunity. Thank you for letting me speak, giving me the opportunity to remember and try to lose perspective. So.
Sing a song of the way we return.
God can handle our anger. Another reflection, sometimes when we become angry, it is difficult to think. We are now in our reptilian brain that simply reacts, and it is so hard to step back and see things clearly. Yes, yes, yes. Some of the best things that we can do when we initially feel that anger rising is to just take that step back and reflect, ask those seven questions, or even just to say to the other person or group of people that we're with, say, you know, I need a moment. I'm feeling angry. I need to start thinking in my neocortex to move. Just taking that step back helps us to move into those higher functions of our brain so that we can see clearly. So thank you for your thoughts and your reflections. Let's stand and sing with the friends.